And we'll now have chair and advisory board member announcements and presentations. I'll start down at the end with Gene. Any announcements?
We had a pretty good storm last week or so, and I don't think too many boats broke loose. So I'm glad everybody checked all their pinta lines.
Great. Thank you. Alan?
No announcements.
Thank you. No?
Nothing.
Go to the other end. Ron? Dana?
Yes.
I would like to make an announcement. In 2 weeks, the 22nd, 23rd, the Morro Bay Yacht Club, along with the Morro Bay Youth Sailing Foundation, will be hosting the Big Rock Regatta. This is their 7th annual. This is part of the Southern California Optimist Series. And last year we had 69 boats. All these kids come from, as far as King Harbor, and we also get some from San Francisco just because they love to come to this event. It's one of the biggest ones, and their parents come, their coaches come, and they all stay here in Morro Bay for 2 days. So it's something to see. The championship fleet we usually have in the upper bay, and the green fleet, the beginning fleet, is in the back between the two mooring fields in that area. So something to watch on the weekend. 22nd, 23rd.
Excellent. Thank you, Dana. We're looking forward to that. Bill, do you have any announcements?
No.
All right, and I don't have any myself. We will now move on to the public comment period. If there is anyone in the audience that would like to address the board, now's your opportunity to do so. And you can address the board on anything that's not on the agenda tonight, or if you need to leave early, you can address us for something that is on the agenda.
Good evening. My name is Jack Hansen. I'm a 30-year resident of Morro Bay. I live on my boat, the Darlene. I've been a commercial fisherman since 1939. And I don't really know where to start here. I got a notice from Eric yesterday that I didn't qualify for my landings. I needed $13,000 worth of fish tickets, and I didn't have it. And I had some problems with two or three of the fish tickets also that weren't right. But I don't want to go back in history here too much, but I moved up here in 1977 from San Pedro, and I had been here about a week, and I was asked to come up to a fisherman's meeting, commercial fisherman's meeting. I didn't know anything about it, and I left the meeting, and I was the president of the Fishermen's Association for 6 years after that. So I, in that interim, I was appointed to Salmon Advisory Board, and about once a month I had to go up to Sacramento with Charlie Fullerton, who was the head of the fishing game at that time. And in one of the times in the elevator, I noticed that the Department of Boating and Waterways sign on one of the doors. And so I thought, well, I'm going to stop in there and talk to the people. So I did. And I asked the guy behind the counter, what's the possibility of getting any money for slips and stuff in Morro Bay? And he says, well, have your city manager contact me. He gave me his card, and the city manager contacted him, and that's when we got our slips and got the pier repaired. And it was pretty fortunate that way. But like I said, I don't know if I got it off or not, but I got it. I used my two medicals the last 2 years, and they weren't actually my medical. They were, my crewman had a heart attack last year right before the opening of salmon season, which it's not easy to find a crewman anymore. And not only that, I got hit by a whale and lost about 3 weeks of the season after I did get going. I'm not looking for excuses or anything. I just I was one of the people that came up with the qualifications for a slip holder. And I can see now the main reasoning, we wanted those slips for commercial boats, and we had, is all right. But I know of only one person, actually, that lost his slip. That was Bill on the Blue Horizon last year. And I felt bad about that. But I don't know. I'm going to try to fish again this year. I know if I lose my slip, that to me it's like a death warrant because I can't tie up to the pier. I know I can't get up the ladder. My breathing is completely gone, which you can probably tell. But I'd like to keep my slip. I don't know what. I know there's another fisherman here, too, that is supposed to be here with the same problem. And his is physical also. But that's about all I can say. But I'd like to see something done that's, we all age and things do catch up to us. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. We appreciate your comments. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing no one else, we will close public comment. And we will move on to our agenda items. We'll start off with item A1 on the consent calendar, the approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on February 6, 2014. Does anyone have any changes or amendments to the minutes as were presented to us most recently?
Was it 2 hours ago?
Yes, earlier today. Seeing none, I'll look for a motion.
I'll motion to accept the minutes.
I'll second that.
It's been motioned by Dana, seconded by Gene to approve the minutes as submitted to us. The most recent version is submitted to us. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It carries unanimously. We'll now move on to item B, public hearings, reports, and appearances. And we'll start off with item B1, our Harbor Department status report with our Harbor Director, Eric Indersby.
Thank you and good evening, folks. I just want to address Jack real quickly, if I may. Jack, as you know in the letter that I gave you yesterday, if you can get me that in writing that you want to appeal it, we'll get it on the agenda for the Harbor Advisory Board to consider. So I can touch bases with that on later as well. So item one on our status report, I can finally, with a sigh of relief, and it's flashing through on our screen here eventually, our new patrol boat finally arrived yesterday. There it is. Being a few months behind, budget-wise, we're okay. We're doing pretty good there, but I won't go into the long, long, sad story of why it took so long, but it was a delay in the fire pump package that continued to keep it from getting here. So boat builder Don Radden got the boat here yesterday, trailered it up. We did some sea trials on it a couple of months ago and got a lot of stuff out of the way, but we're down to kind of the final nitty-gritty stuff. Engine break-ins on the main engines and on the fire pump engine. Can't really say anything bad about it other than it doesn't match the same color as our other boats. It's a little brighter than the other two. So it's about the only thing I can say bad about it, which it's not a bad thing. Our other boats are too faded is what it really is. So the boat's here. I've invited anybody to come on down and have a look. We're going to do a christening ceremony here in the next week or two. I'm sure we'll put out all the invites to anybody who wants to come down and celebrate the boat that took a long time and a number of years of funding as well to get in place. I mean, it took a couple of city councils and Harbor Advisory Board support and support from the community and city managers, past and present, to get this to come to fruition. And it's a really nice boat, so we're pretty happy with things. North T Pier Maintenance and Repair, Associated Pacific Constructors got their first notice to proceed, otherwise known as an NTP, from our construction manager on the 26th of February. That means they've gone ahead and started ordering materials, begun figuring out what their time schedule is going to look like, figuring out when they're going to mobilize and start putting together their work plans and submitting bonding and insurance and all the other good stuff that they need to do. So that's all moving forward very well. At the February 11th City Council meeting, we asked for and were granted another $125,000 towards that project. We originally had, I want to say, about $650,000, and not knowing what the bids were going to come in as, we structured the bid document to be flexible. We had what was called a base bid, which was the real core stuff that we absolutely had to get done, and then a per-unit basis for pilings and pile caps and other things that we were able to exercise depending on what the low bid came in at. So once we got the bids, we knew where we were standing between wanting to do some other additive alternates and continuing consultant work on geophysical pile drive built on top of old buildings that were old World War II surplus barracks and whatnot that went in there. So on Vi's project, on the off-the-hook end, what she's proposing is leaving the restaurant largely intact, the restaurant up front largely intact, and then the building in back that eventually goes up to two stories, that whole building comes out. That's the old World War II surplus gear back there. So that whole thing comes out, building in a one-story area of retail and shops, restaurant will remain, restrooms, and then the ADA accessible restrooms, as well as boardwalk along the backside, and then opening up some walkway space between her and the next lease site to the south, which is also been approved for consent to landowner a couple meetings ago. So both those lease sites over the next, you know, depending on permitting, 2 to 4 years, we'll start seeing some pretty major rebuild. Hopefully be able to time it to where they're both under construction at the same time to kind of minimize disturbance of the whole flow and everybody being down there. So good news on that lease site. On the events, Tall Ships Lady Washington and Hawaiian Chieftain were here February 5th, and they departed on the 12th. Did their usual dockside tours, their cannonades, people singing sea shanties, the whole nine yards, verbally taunting their opponents. All that fun stuff that they do when they bring folks out on those day sails, in addition to the tours on the boat. So the next port of call after that was San Francisco. They rove up and down the coast, and I think they also end up on the East Coast from time to time. So always good to see them. It's been a number of years since we've had both of those boats here. It seemed we had them here together for a long time, and then they kind of split up. I think one ended up over on the East Coast. So we ended up with one of them, and then they're both back here, so we got both those boats again. A couple other items are kind of follow-ups on Harbor Advisory Board recommendations that I kind of want to just close the loop on, the City Council. City Council, at December 10th meeting, approved changes to the harbors and rules and regulations to allow for those two vessel owners to put either boat in their slip. We've since changed those rules. Basically use the recommended language that I passed on and then you guys passed as well. So that occurred December 10th. Currently, we've got one boat taking advantage of it. I think the other fellow that came to us, a couple of years ago when this all started, he's since sold his second boat. But we do have one of our fishermen taking advantage of that, which is good. And then also the December 10th meeting, the City Council adopted Resolution 6113 that made changes to the bylaws for the Harbor Advisory Board that allowed for fishermen to have alternates to their seat. So as we saw, I think, the other meeting, we had... Did we have Tom and Joe here last meeting? I think we did.
Yes.
But anyhow, they went through the full interview panel, and so we've got two alternates, and we've got Alan here, which is nice because we've had an empty seat here for a while. And then at the January 14th, 2014 meeting, council voted to approve that the State Park Marina operating agreement as a be brought back as a report in 6 months and again in 12 months after further Harbor Advisory Board review and hearing. As you recall, we brought it to you folks here a few months ago in terms of questions, what do we want to do? Do we want to stay in the agreement, keep looking for trying to dredge, trying to do the rebuild, get out of it altogether? I think we're pretty unanimously on board with staying in the agreement, continue to try and seek funding for dredging and the larger projects. So we'll be bringing that back in the next month or two to the Harbor Advisory Board for some further analysis as well as starting to meet with State Parks personnel. They actually emailed me, Brooke Gutierrez, she's the superintendent of this area. She emailed me a few weeks ago saying, hey, what do we need to get together with the State Park Marina and figure out what we're going to do there. So timing's good. So hopefully we'll start seeing some more interest and activity in trying to figure out what we're going to do with it. California Department of Boating and Waterways moved, as you know, and I've reported into recreation and parks as a division, as opposed to being its own standalone department. That move is pretty much done. I think all the bumps have been smoothed out and the dust has settled. And with luck, now that Boating and Waterways, who is the agency that gave us probably close to $2 million worth of grants over the last 10 years to dredge that marina and do all our feasibility studies, now that they're in parks and that is a park facility, we're hoping that the two agencies that are now one agency will have a little more availability to get at some funding to go after that larger renovation. And then CMANC, the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference, that's one of our trade organizations that we belong to that is largely interested in the Corps of Engineers and what they do, primarily dredging, but other harbor infrastructure up and down the coast. They put together a meeting every year in Washington, D.C., where representatives of the local agencies from, I think Port St. Louis always touts himself as the smallest member, and they probably are, and we're probably a close second. All the way from little folks like us to the Port of L.A. Go there and pretty much walk lockstep and arm in arm together, going to the Corps of Engineers and OMB and to our legislative. And then if I can make a suggestion, if I may be so bold, item D1 on the agenda, request for a waiver. Since Mr. Sylvester is here in the audience, and that's pretty far down the agenda, and we've got a little bit of a long agenda, I might suggest that if we could move that up with the board's consensus, if the chairman is so inclined. If Mr. Sylvester would like that, or if he just wants to hang out here for a few hours.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Yeah, we'll consider that in a moment. Anything else with regard to your report?
No, that's it, unless there's any other questions, comments.
Thank you. Questions or comments for the harbor director, Gene?
Yeah, can we take the new boat out for a spin?
Sure.
Good.
By yourselves?
Yeah.
No.
Any other questions, comments from that end? No. Down here, Ron.
Eric, four things relative to the new boat. You got to see the monitor work. About 250 feet by my eyeball. It's awesome. Doesn't quite reach City Hall from the waterfront, but it's getting close.
And it's not even full power. We're still limited on how much power we can put out.
It's a nice piece of equipment.
Yeah. Fire department's very pleased about having the possibility of getting that much volume.
I think you should get some of their budget.
I'll work on that.
Okay, moving right along. Relative to the North T Pier, is there a defined scope of work at this time? Although I understood your scoping might still be going on, if it doesn't exist right now, when will a defined scope of work be set?
Yes, we do have a defined scope of work. The bid, and I'm happy to sit down with you at a later date and really go over it if you want to get the details, but the bid package had a base bid of a defined scope of work on, Bent's, XYZ as the base, and then additive alternates, meaning, price to replace, one structural pile, price to replace one fender pile, one pile cap, one stringer, knowing that, there's areas we know that could need more attention but aren't as critical that we may want to get to while we're in a certain area, and also as we open up, it's like opening up the hood on an old car that you haven't looked in 15 years. You don't know what's going to be in there until you open it up, so some of that's just contingency for the what-ifs when we open things up. But, yeah, we do have a defined scope, and I can get that to you.
Given defined up front and then exploratory work that is unknown at this time, how will the end delivery date of the work be handled?
There, and I don't have the exact number of days memorized that we are allowing construction to take place. I'll just say for sake of argument, 120 days, but I won't say that's the correct number because I don't know it off the top of my head. From the second notice to proceed, the first notice to proceed, which we gave, gets all the bonding insurance and them ordering start ordering things. As soon as all those items are in place and all the paperwork's been completed, we issue the second notice to proceed, and from there, that's when the clock starts, and then they have a defined timeline in which they have to complete things.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate to ask two questions that are not in the current staff report?
Yeah, try it and we'll see.
Okay. It's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, it could easily be, that the fuel dock leases, by the leases, I mean there's more than one parcel, are currently month to month. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And have fuel sales been reported to the city for 2012 and 2013?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Don't know what they are, but yes. They annually, it's part of all of our leases have the base rent, and then the ones that have percent gross, they report at the end of the year, and that becomes payable at the next fiscal year, and the fuel sales get wrapped up in that year-end reporting as well. So, yes, we have those figures.
Okay. Well, I'm less concerned with the details of the revenue at the moment as I am with what the trending is for fuel demand at the dock.
Right.
And finally, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. Can you briefly give us an update on the Coast Guard building expansion?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I would have gotten in trouble with my mayor because he wanted me to bring it up. Yes, I can. If I can find my notes. So I'll wing it for a second here, but the Coast Guard facility expansion, we've looked at a couple different areas, and I meant to put this on my status report, so good timing. They were looking at a couple different areas. As you know, it went to council twice, and neither of those two areas were acceptable. Then they started focusing in on our building again and issues, zoning issues, moving the street and truck throughway issues, and we submitted all that to them. And we're now waiting on them to get back to us whether or not they think that under that scenario it's viable for them. So basically they're looking at just expanding out on their existing site.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? I do have a question for you, Eric. You mentioned under your lease news item those two lease sites where the off-the-hook restaurant is. So that's, I think, the narrowest sidewalk in the entire Embarcadero. I would assume that the sidewalk is going to be widened there.
Yeah, that's come on all of these redevelopments. Yeah, I think it's probably 6, might even be 5 foot, but yeah, it'll go out to the full 8 foot. Yeah. And they've done a, their design is interesting. They've done a big open design in the front. And, looks good. So they're retaining a fair amount of the space that has those little kid, put the quarter in rides, because those are amazingly popular.
It's like a little park. Right?
I wish we had a little kid's zone down here on the waterfront somewhere. So they're maintaining a lot of that open space on that side of the site as well.
Great. Thank you. And just as a matter of procedural clarification, questions of a general nature are fine. Anything that relates to harbor operations are fine, as long as we don't get into... I know sometimes the agenda is confining to us, but if it's related to harbor operations, that's free game. That concludes our harbor director's report. And at the suggestion of our harbor director and with the consensus of the board, I would like to move item D1 under new business up to the present. Does anyone object to that? No. All right, so we will now move on to item D1. Which is a request by Richard Sylvester for a waiver of requirement to qualify for a commercial fishing slip. And we'll turn this back over to our harbor director here.
Thank you. So last year, I think we entertained, or maybe it was the year before, we've entertained a couple of requests for an additional waiver. I think we had 3 year before last. Basically, as you heard earlier, there's requirements for maintaining those slips and showing that you're an active commercial fisherman, and it's evidenced by Fish and Game, either California or other West Coast states, but basically Fish and Game landing receipts, and it's based on X number of dollars per, $1,000 of fish landing receipts per net documented ton of your vessel. Whether that was drawn up out of some formula or for some specific idea. Basically, it assumed, the larger the boat, the larger the fishery it's engaged in and the more revenue it generates, and therefore it's sort of a sliding scale. But it's a bare minimum that each fisherman has to provide every year. Or fuel receipts or a combination of fuel receipts and fish reach tickets that show 90 days of fishing effort. So that's kind of the bar they need to get over. Some years, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's medical reasons and the fishermen can't fish, weather reasons and it kills them during their season, mechanical reasons, or just a bad year. You know, we've had a couple salmon disasters years where the city council, instead of folks submitting salmon receipts, salmon landing receipts, they could just submit their salmon permit. Because a lot of guys, and Mr. Sylvester's one, he fishes primarily, probably exclusively, salmon. And when there was no salmon allowed to be fished, you're not going to land anything. So those were some other grant waivers that were granted. And there's been some other years where the council has granted blanket waivers for the whole fleet. But each fisherman, aside from all those waivers, are allowed two waivers in any 10-year period from qualifying. And it's, you know, the bad years, the medical, the health, the, you know, mechanical, whatever. The salmon waiver or the special waivers that council is granted, those don't count in that 2 and 10 calculation. The 2 and 10 is entirely on its own. And Mr. Sylvester, for last couple of years, in 2000, what were the 2 years? 2007 and 2011, he needed waivers from qualifying. So within that 10-year period, he's run out of his two. So now he's coming here and appealing per the resolution that City Council did back in 1991 that just kind of spells all this stuff out. So he's here today, or here tonight, to appeal that waiver. As you know, we did, I think, three waivers a few years ago. Two of those fishermen, as Mr. Hansen spoke of, there were actually two that ended up losing their slip because they couldn't qualify a fourth year, basically. They were granted a third waiver by the Harbor Advisory Board, and fourth year they still weren't, didn't have any landings, and they lost their slip. So Mr. Sylvester's here tonight if he wants to say a word or two, but that's the basic background of it all.
Thank you, Eric. We'll invite Mr. Sylvester up in a moment if he has any comments for us. Before that, are there any questions about the process for our harbor director? Yes, Ron?
I'm sure the answer is yes, but just to be clear, because it isn't in the discussion, this would
last one, then that was it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So there has been some precedence for a third waiver?
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. So at this time, I would like to invite Mr. Sylvester up to the podium. I know that it's difficult, frankly, for you to have to come up and ask about this. We have received, I want the viewing audience to know as well, we have received your written notice, and that gives us some good background information. Anything else that you would like to share with us tonight, we appreciate what you have to say.
No, I don't think I do. I'm just here. I'll do whatever whatever you guys want. If you want me over on a tee pier, I'll go there. But it's, you know, I'm just up here trying to see if I could stay another year. And I was kind of laid up this year, kind of bad. But it happens to a lot of people sometimes. And can't cry over spilt milk. You just got to forge on, so just that's all I'm just asking for is it would be pretty nice to be able to stay in there, but of course I can understand the rules and regulations the way they were made, you know, so whatever you say, I'll abide by them. Is there any questions that you might I got right to the point to where I was leaving, and that's when I ended up going to the hospital, and I was in there for about 19 days, and it just kind of put the end of my season right there. But I'm not going to beg for anything, but I'll just go by whatever you guys say. I don't know what else. I'm not a speaker. And you can obviously understand that. I can BS with anybody on a corner somewhere where it's quiet, but when it comes to standing in front of people, I don't like that. But anyway, I don't know. Is there questions you want to ask of me or anything?
Thank you, Mr. Sylvester. And yes, there may be. And I wanted to mention one more time for the public, for the viewers, that The letter that you wrote us with extenuating circumstances is a matter of public record, and it is in our board packet, so that if anyone wants to see that, they can go online and look that up in the agenda. At this time, are there any board members that have questions for Mr. Sylvester? Jane?
Hey, Dickie, how's the boat working?
How's it what?
How's your boat working?
Oh, it's working good. It's getting a little bit better. There's a lot of the fisheries that I used to do can't do anymore. I'm trying to change over I've got a small crab permit, and I'm trying to utilize it, and that's what I've been doing, is trying to get crab gear together. It won't be this year, but it'll be next year. I've been doing engine room work and stuff like that to try to get it for that.
Well, I saw you out fishing last summer for salmon, and
yeah,
it sure was nice to see it out in the water fishing. It looks great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Any other questions for Mr. Sylvester? On this side, Ron?
Mr. Sylvester, forgive me for asking you questions about your personal life. I don't think I'd be very happy if somebody did that to me, but under the circumstances, based on what you know today, sir, of your condition and the boat's condition and the fisheries, the condition of the fisheries, what are your plans, please, for at least 2014 relative to commercial fishing?
Put that a little relative to commercial fishing. What do you mean? Am I intending to fish?
Yes, sir.
Until I die. That's the only thing I know. I was brought up with my dad, and I was not born here. I was born in Avila and raised in Avila. My father had a business there, him and my uncle, and they were in it for quite a long time. He first fishing, and then they started an abalone business in Avila. Abalone is just something you don't even hear about anymore. And it was quite a thriving business. And then they got out of that when things slowed down. And then I grew up, went to high school. My dad swore that I was going to be educated. He came from the old country. He couldn't read or write. But he had a good head on his shoulders. And so he guaranteed that if I did that aside, and we can't fish gill nets no more, and it's getting harder and harder to make any kind of a living the way the industry is going. There's a few fisheries left, but nothing like we used to have. God, we used to have rock cod, trolling for ling cod. We used to have abalones, hook and line rock. It was a myriad of things that you could do. It seems like nowadays that I don't know. I don't want to display my anger because I get PO'd when I start thinking about all these people that think that they know an industry more than the people that have been doing it for years. And that's not the way it is. It's more, how do I say it? I don't know. It's more touchy-feely or something. They'd rather have I see just things that go on that just make me think, I can't believe that these people think that a kangaroo rat is worth more than maybe a person building a nice home with a nice...
Mr. Sylvester, I'm going to reel us back into your fishing analogy.
I'm getting out of the way.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Sylvester from board members? Gene? Alan?
Do you think that the qualification should be changed, in your opinion?
No, not at all.
Do you feel 2 years and then a third year is a waiver if possible?
You should probably not have the waiver, but I, like other people, are asking for it.
You find yourself in that position, sure.
Yes, I don't like this position at all.
But my question is, do you think that we ought to be talking about liberalizing it a little bit?
I don't think. There's certain times when, yes, it's necessary. Because it may come to a point like it came to me that there is no other way. One of those times I had a knee replacement. And that was one of the times when I got a waiver. I had a new knee put in, and it was right at the end of the season. So, you know, it can happen to anybody. But anyway, whatever you say is, I'll just let it go at that. I'm not. I'd appreciate it, but then again, I'm not going to hold you responsible for it either. It was me. So, anyway.
Thank you, sir. Gene, did you have a question?
No, I was going to make a motion.
Okay. Mr. Sylvester, we appreciate you coming up. We appreciate your comments, and thank you very much.
Okay.
Do you have a comment?
I have a question.
A question? Go for it.
How many, is there a waiting list for the commercial fishing slips right now, Eric?
Yeah, there is. I don't recall in my 20 years of being in this department there ever not being boats on the waiting list. Goes up and down, but it's, couldn't tell you right now how many are, you know, boats of his size or other boats on there, but we've always had a waiting list. It's not long. I mean, it's not scores of boats long, but yeah.
Good question. Any other informational questions, procedural questions? No, then I'll look for a motion at this time so we can move on to discussion.
Yes, I think Dick is a part of the fabric of Morro Bay, and I'd make a recommendation to the City Council that we recommend that we extend another waiver for him.
All right, it's moved to extend the waiver by Gene. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Lynn. All right, we'll now move on to discussion. Anything further, Gene, that you'd like to say with regard to the motion and the seconder of the motion, Lynn? Any other discussion? Ron?
It seems to me that if we move to recommend a third waiver to the City Council, which, as Bill points out, is not a part of the ordinance, even bearing in mind that there's such waivers, a third waiver is, there is a precedent for it historically. I would suggest a couple of conditions. One, that our recommendation include the recommendation from staff that's in the conclusion paragraph, which has to do with no further waivers be granted, Mr. Sylvester, until the next one would be allowed under the two waivers.
I mean, it's totally acceptable and totally understandable, yes.
Ellen?
You said that it reverts to back to two waivers in a 10-year period. Now, does that mean that it'll be controlled by the 2007 or the 2011? I mean, when will he be eligible for his next waiver?
The
2018.
Correct, because you know it's even when the 2007 one drops off the backside of the 10-year period, you've still got two
right
hanging there. So you'd have to have two of them drop off.
All right, further, we do have a motion on the table, yeah. So further discussion with regard to the motion on the table? No other discussion?
I'm sorry, I'm happy to vote on the motion, but not unless it's amended.
So the makers of the motion at this point could do a friendly amendment if they wanted to amend the motions themselves. We don't have to vote on it. You can take a friendly amendment, or you don't have to if you don't want to.
I think staff is confident and make sure that he's going to do what he needs to be done, and I will not approve of the amendment to the motion.
All right. So at this time, Ron, you could move to amend the motion, and then if we had a majority vote to amend the motion, it would be amended that way.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to do that.
All right, so it's been motioned, it's been moved to amend the motion on the table. Is there a second to the move to amend? All right, that motion fails for lack of a second. Any other discussion with regard to the motion on the table? Seeing no more discussion, I'll call for a vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
The vote carries 6-1. Thank you very much. We have, and for a fellow that that professed not to be able to speak, you did a good job up there, Mr. Sylvester. And we have some noisy harbor seals out there, and I heard a few of them barking this morning telling me that it was your birthday as well, so happy birthday to you. All right, so that completes item D1 on new business. We'll now move back to our regular items on our agenda, back up to section B, public hearings, reports, and appearances. Item B2, which is a presentation by the Marine Mammal Center on the center's activities. We have a representative here from the Marine Mammal Center. I apologize to you that it took this long. We didn't expect our first items to go that long. So if you would please approach the podium for an update on what's going on at the Marine Mammal Center. And if you would please introduce yourself when you come up as well. I know who you are, Lisa, but not everybody else does.
Hi, I know you do, Jeff. So my name is Lisa Harper Henderson. I am the manager of the San Luis Obispo operations for the Marine Mammal Center. We cover 600 miles of California coastline, and I'm happy that we were invited to enlighten you on our work, what we do, and give you a little bit about species ID, Jeff. I'm just going to go ahead and do I need to stay on the mic? So basically, I think I just mentioned, we cover 600 miles of California coastline, and we are therefore one of the largest marine mammal facilities in the world. We main menu is rescue, rehabilitate, release back to the wild. Along with that, we do a huge amount of education. We teach over 75,000 kids and adults, 100,000 visitors to our facility. And we are a volunteer-based organization, over 1,000 volunteers, less than 45 paid staff. So we would not exist and do what we do without those volunteers, and we are a nonprofit. So through the years, briefly, started in 1975, some concerned individual citizens up in the Bay Area were concerned about some sick and injured marine mammals, and they were able to start working on this site, and it's the same site we're still on. It was originally a Nike missile silo, and it has been transformed, and we are in a national park. Right here, I don't know if any of you have been out. We're on the back side of the power plant. I invite anybody that wants to come visit and have the mini tour to contact me. And this is our facility. We are a triage facility. Let me just go back. And so meaning that our main hospital is in Sausalito. That's where all the animals go. We have a second triage facility that is in Moss Landing, and that's also on power plant property. And our here we do, the volunteers do basically everything. Public is out there. They're concerned about a sick, injured animal. They call. We basically, our three main marine mammals that we handle here are the harbor seal, California sea lion, and the northern elephant seal. Here you're also going to see the southern sea otter, very familiar with those guys that are right here in our bay. We do handle cetaceans, which include dolphin, porpoise, and whales. I'm just going to go briefly through. This may be new. I know we all live here and enjoy all the wildlife that we have on the coastline. And so California sea lions. So, Jeff, the ones that were barking are California sea lions, sounding like the dogs. One of our most common patients, these guys are oftentimes they come in if they are malnourished, injured, and or maternally separated prematurely. So their ID, they're the guys with the little ear flaps on the outside and the long front flippers, and as we're all well aware of, they bark. Brown, tan fur, external ears, long front flippers. They use these for walk-in climbing. I think we're familiar with their climbing rocks and docks, et cetera. And they swim using those front flippers, extremely, extremely powerful. One of our next patients, the northern elephant seals, I think we're all familiar with those, with Piedras Blancas, become quite a very popular tourist destination for the Central Coast. So we have just ended the pup season, and right now we have a lot of wieners out there that our mom has left, and they're basically left on the beach alone to find out how to swim and how to forage and how to catch their own fish. During that process, we do not interfere in the rookeries, go in, whatever's happening in there. But when we have animals that go out, venture out, they end up right here next to the rock or in Cayucas, members of the public call us, and then that's when we're going to come out and assess that animal's condition. Not all animals that get called into us need any help or need an assistance, and in that case, we're just going to leave them on a watch. If it's a place where it's a lot of population, a lot of dogs, we might relocate that animal just for human and animal safety. So, has everybody here been up to the Piedras Blancas? I hope. These guys are born at approximately 80 pounds, and they're going to gain from 200 to 300 pounds within 4 weeks while they're being nursed by moms on the beach. The mothers do not leave to forage. They stay on the beach that entire time. And then once they're weaned, they depart. Not quite as maternal as the southern sea otters. These little animals will have just a hole in the side to their true seal, and there's no external ear flap. And as you can see here, they've got some short front flippers, so basically they're undulating along the sand. They're not climbing like a California sea lion. Short front flippers, scoot on land. Males, adult males, have you seen those guys? With the big, it's called a proboscis. It's the big nose that they grow, and they're going to be up to 4,000 to 5,000 pounds. We don't rescue those ones. The harbor seals. So I think we just mentioned the harbors, which we have out here as well in the harbor. And these are the guys with spots. So if you see one, either light with dark spots or dark with light, dark with white, that is a harbor seal. They're the only species on our coastline that has the spots. These are the ones that are real if you're out there on the bay. The little heads just kind of spy hopping, sticking straight up. They're very, very curious. Animals can be very shy but curious as well. Also a true seal, and they've got that hole there. Oftentimes we might get a call and somebody thinks that they've been, you know, shot in the head. No, that is their ear. So we like to explain that, and we like to do a lot of education for the public and for visitors that come to our area. So very popular, also very popular here in Morro Bay. We have a resident group that in about the last 4 years stays right over there by Target Rock. This species is in the endangered species list, and they're covered under California Fish and Wildlife. They do monitoring, captures, and studies on these animals. The densest fur of any animal on the planet, up to 1 million hairs per square inch. Kind of hard to believe. We ask the school kids if they want to start counting. But basically, these animals have virtually no blubber layer. So their fur is the only thing that keeps them warm. It's the only way they thermoregulate. Very susceptible to oil spills, contaminants in the water. Basically a sentinel canary in the coal mine, if you would, that is telling us what's going on in our oceans. And what's affecting these animals is also going to be affecting all of the human population. They do have little external ears, and the front are paws, and the rears are flippers. Rescue. This part of it, a lot of different ways that we rescue. Right here, we're using a net. This is an adult male California sea lion. The boards that you see are called herding boards, also popular used in zoos, and I think they originated with the pig farmers that we're using to move the animals around. It is for safety. It's for the safety of those animals, safety for the by the Friends of the Elephant Seal folks up there, and he does seem to be healing quite well. The rehabilitation happens, as I said, up in Sausalito Main Hospital, where they will get the full examination from our veterinary staff, and depending on what's happening with that animal, they might get a procedure, a surgery, or they're going to be in the pools. The young ones, when we get them maternally separated, especially the young elephant seals that we're seeing now that come up, they're just not quite learning the learning curve of how to fish. And so if they come into us, There, we start tube feeding. Basically, they get a fish milkshake. And from there, we gradually put them onto fish. And the whole point is to have them free feeding, catching the fish on their own, and then they're released to the wild. We do a lot of scientific research. With our sea lions, there's a lot of cancer prevalent in these animals, a lot of the PCBs, a lot of contaminations that we find. And so we do work with a lot of human medicine doctors. Also, we have a condition. It's a DA, domoic acid toxicity, and that causes seizures. And so there's a lot of collaboration between seizure activity in humans and what they're seeing in these animals. So there's a lot of crossover and real interesting science. We have people from all over the world come. We have a database and tissue banks that go back 30-some years. So we're just a great resource for a lot of the scientific community. They're just a tube feeding here. Releases, most often those releases are happening up north. So animals that are rescued or picked up down here typically are going to be released north of San Francisco. We have Point Reyes. We also have a Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. These are good locations. The animals do not have to come back to where they were from as long as there's a healthy population. One exception to that rule would be an adult sea otter. They are territorial, and they would have to come back. The sea otters that we rescue here that are injured do go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium. They have the SORAC program, which is a sea otter research program. They are more situated and set up for doing that rehabilitation. Plus, they eat very expensive. Whoop. What happened? Okay, great. We're back. Why are animals getting sick? Variety of reasons. Disease, ocean trash, separation, the entanglements that I already mentioned. We have separation. You're going to see this is just an example of if anybody sees an animal on the beach, to basically, and I've got some cards here, we'll give you the information on the number to call. We have a local number. Call us. We're going to come out and make that determination. Basically, anybody, if you see a marine mammal, they're wild animals. And just like, you know, if you're going to go up and looking at a bear in the wild, you're not going to get close. They do bite. They do carry zoonotic diseases, which can be translated to humans and to our pets if you have your dogs on the beach as well. So you want to make sure you keep them away, and then you call the people who are authorized under the National Marine Fisheries Service to actually handle these animals. It is illegal for anyone to harm, harass, or handle a marine mammal unless they're authorized by NMFS. Ocean trash, I could go on and on about this. We have, of course, the plastics that are in the ocean and that do not biodegrade, so we are always wanting to speak about that and just make sure that along with the rest of the folks, we want a healthy, vibrant ocean. We want it to be healthy, and we want the sea life to be healthy. And so to that end, we will always continue to educate children. Diseases, infections, pneumonia, toxins. I had mentioned cancer already that we're seeing in these animals. The older animals primarily, also dolphins, they store a lot of them in their blubber layers, and it doesn't leave. DA, real briefly, because we do see this a lot. Predominantly, we had 2009 was just a humongous year. San Luis Obispo County was the predominant county for our rescue range that did see this condition. Typically, it's a neurotoxin. So it's an algae bloom that is consumed by the fish. It does not affect the fish, but it affects whatever eats those fish. In this case, we're talking top of the food chain and their adult, typically female, male, adult California sea lions. It's also can be termed a paralytic shellfish contamination. So when you see that the mussels are in quarantine, that there's no harvesting, that also comes from the domoic acid toxicity, and it's part of a whole statewide system that keeps a check on that because it can affect the humans. So if we start seeing these animals coming in with this condition, we often see it in the animals before the water testing monitors see it. We can alert them that this is going on, and then they can take extra precautions to hopefully keep the folks and the human species as well who are consuming the same food from getting poisoned, and you don't want this. It's a neurotoxin. It causes seizures. We can treat it. We can stop the seizures and get them basically very hydrated, try to run fluids. They're going to get an IV fluid just like you might in the hospital. I'll not go real into it. They can always become a member. And I want to thank you. Try to keep that brief and concise. I'm available for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Lisa. We'll now open it up to questions from board members. Lynn?
Microphone, Lynn. Are these animals, be they harbor seals or the sea lions, picky about which kind of fish they eat?
Typically, they're going to be opportunistic eaters. They so typically feed on, well, it depends with age class. So they're going to be feeding on bait fish. The elephant seals have a very interesting physiology where they can dive. They've been found to dive up to 5,000 feet and have stayed underwater for up to 2 hours. That allows them to go very, very deep. So it's skate, squid, and other types of feed like that.
So they're not really selective in their diets?
Not particularly. There may be particular animals that have a preference to something in particular, but when it comes to, you know, what's out there and if I'm hungry, then they're going to eat what's available.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions? No? Alan.
I was just curious. I guess the sea lions and the elephant seals are semi-pelagic, is that right?
The elephant seals, so the northern elephant seal is pelagic in the sense that they spend 8 months of their year out foraging, and they travel a very, very long distance. They can travel all the way out to the Aleutian Islands and back.
And how far from shore do they get?
They can get all the way across the Pacific.
How about the sea lions?
The California sea lions, they do travel more up and down the coast as opposed to, you know, crossing shores from this side to the other side of the Pacific.
And the harbor seals stay close to the beach?
Harbor seals are more, yes. They seem to have their rookeries where they gather and where they give birth. We've got a really nice rookery around here very close. And we're going right into that pup season. We do try to start a campaign about Leave Seals Be. These little ones are about yay big. They're fuzzy. They're small. They're portable. They do a little ma, ma. Sounds like they're calling. They are calling exactly for their mothers. But we have illegal pickups. They're well-intentioned. They want to help that animal. They think it's been abandoned. The difference between that harbor seal's mom is that she's small, a lot smaller than the elephant seals. She can't stay with her pup for 4 weeks and not go out and forage. So she's going to leave that pup, hope that it's safe, go out to forage and eat, and then come back to nurse that pup. And that's when we end up having some interferences. Usually people are trying to help, but if anybody sees a little pup on the beach, you want to call the Marine Mammal Center.
For those of us that went to the beach that day in our biology class, what does pelagic mean?
Pelagic means an animal spends primarily most of their life out at sea, so offshore. The fur seals, we do handle fur seals. They're more rare for us. We get the northern fur seals. We also get Guadalupe fur seals, who are coming out of Baja California. They are truly a pelagic species. So if we have a fur seal that hits our shore, there's something definitely wrong. They don't belong on the beaches. They're definitely way off in the islands, Farallon Islands.
Thank you. Other questions for Lisa? Lynn.
The
one with the spots?
The sea lion.
Okay.
The population of California sea lions is approximately what now? And
it's a healthy population. It's a healthy population. I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers on that population, but it is, as I said, it's a steady, healthy population.
Is it getting too healthy?
Not by any of the statistics that we're getting from the scientists and the marine biologists that are studying that. I know concern for a lot of folks. For you to know that the individual animals that we respond to and that are released are such a very, very small percentage, they virtually have zero impact on the population. It's more of compassion for a species, responding to the public when they're out there. They want somebody to come to help, and also for the science and medicine that we learn from these animals.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? All right. Lisa Harper-Henderson of the Marine Mammal Center, thank you so much for coming and giving us an update. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Let me just give them the phone number, if that would be appropriate. It's an 805-771-8300, and that is our local number for if you see a stranded marine mammal in distress, that's the number to call.
Thank you very
right.
much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We have a point of personal privilege. Let's take a 5-minute break, and we will reconvene.
About a decade ago, where they had some high copper loading issues in the pretty enclosed basin, and they were looking at staring down the barrel of the Regional Water Quality Control Board coming down with some pretty draconian regulation, and they said, hold on, wait a minute, how about we do our own efforts to try and clean up the water and clean up the sediment and see what happens. And they proposed a clean marina program where they put together a suite of best management practices for boat, harbor, and marine operation, presented that over a number of years to the board and to their lease owners there, and the regional board bought off on it and said, okay, that sounds good. You comply with these things. And it's basically a series of best management practices from, emergencies and petroleum containment. In the, staff report, I spelled them all out: boat maintenance, boat cleaning, marine operations, fish waste, liquid waste, solid waste, sewage discharge, all the things that boats and marinas entail in terms of potentials for pollution and ways to best manage those potentials to keep those things out of the water, and practices that clean up and minimize any sort of pollution, whether it's petroleum pollution or bilge water or sewage, anything. So the regional boards down there bought off on that. They put together this clean marina program. And then other agencies such as ourselves, in particular the California Harbor Masters Association, really started looking at it as we all were sort of staring down that same barrel, especially with copper bottom paint. It's become a pretty controversial item where it's probably going to end up getting regulated out of existence. But the regional boards up and down the state looked at it as well. There was efforts over the last decade to institute, I think, both a state but a federal discharge permit for every marina. In other words, if you own a marina, you've got to have a permit for the waters that come in your marina and the waters leave your marina, discharge permit. Largely, a lot of those things are out of your control. Things that come washing down the watershed, you don't have a lot of control over. So there was a federal and a state marina permit that was looking like it was going to be coming down the pike, and then the federal government was looking at a boat discharge permit where even recreational boaters like you and me that, have got a 30-foot sailboat, you're going to have to get a permit, discharge permit from the federal government for an NPDES permit for discharging your bilge water just for normal leakage. So all those things kind of came to a head. Associations were looking at helping their members, and agencies and marina owners up and down the coast were looking at the possibility of having to get these permits and comply with them and testing and all the cost and expense and manpower that would entail. And they all started looking at this clean marina program and said, hey, this is working down in San Diego. The San Diego Regional Board is buying off on it. Let's try and take it statewide. So they expanded out into the San Diego region. It turned into they made full nonprofit status out of it. It was all volunteer-based. Kept growing in San Diego, and then a couple of trade organizations, the Marina Recreation Association and the Harbor Masters Association, adopted it and began to promote it statewide and started getting their members to become mentors and become inspectors in the program. And it's really grown and grown and grown to where the point where the program now has other states in the nation looking towards the California program. And internationally, there's actually other marinas in other countries that are looking at the California program as the model. So it's become a successful model. We first got our certification back in 2006. It was relatively simple. It's for us in that we're a public agency that does public safety, and we do pollution response and pollution abatement, enforcement. We enforce all that stuff. I've got all the emergency response protocols and regulations in place, both within my department and within the fire department and the greater city family. So we had a lot of the stuff already in place. Really, the Clean Marina Program, to a large extent, is just formalizing what you may be doing already, having written protocols, maybe adopting some new protocols, and having equipment on hand to contain and deal with the normal pollution-type things that a marina potentially entails. So we first got certified, as I said, back in 2006. It's a five-year certification. It's changed over the years. It's sort of a living document. They revise annually. There's a board of directors. It's a California nonprofit board of directors. They change the some of the standards from time to time. There's a list of, and I've got it here, pretty big manual that it entails. I mean, it's a good inch and a half thick. There's mandatory items that you absolutely have to have. Some of them are formalized in law that you're complying with anyhow. You know, thou shalt not discharge petroleum. Well, duh, nobody can. Nobody's supposed to. That's complied with. But there's other things that you, and we had to adopt some new procedures and some new equipment in order to get the certification, because we weren't doing everything in there. So it does raise the bar for everybody. Again, since we had a lot of those things in place, it was a little simpler for us. But for some other Marines, it's not out of now. There's 123, I think, at the time when we were certified. There were, it reached the triple digits probably, maybe about 2010. And it continues to grow every year. There's more and more folks getting on board. So it's starting. So rather than, rather than some potentially onerous permit that were coming down the pike for boaters and marinas, this program was brought forward and carried forward by a lot of different agencies and adopted. And it's starting to show up in like coastal development permits. In other words, if an entity wants to rebuild their marina, clean marina certifications is starting to come along in some of the permit requirements. We currently use our clean marina certification as one of our boxes we check for our the city's discharge permit. Every city has to have a through the regional water board a stormwater discharge permit. And part of that is managing your stormwater runoff and the waters that are within your jurisdiction. And put one of the boxes we check, and one of the things we hold up to the Regional Water Board is, hey, we're Clean Marina certified. I've recently, we cover, theoretically the whole bay, the city of Morro Bay, in our certification, but we do have some larger operations on the bay that, as our leases have come up for expiration, the city, and we're starting to put in clean and marina certification. Dane, as you know, I think the yacht club was the guinea pig that we got to get in our lease negotiations when we renewed the mooring field. So the yacht club agreed to try and obtain clean marina certification, and we're going to help them along with that. And then recently in the Bayfront Marina lease, which is the old fuel dock down at the south end, recently changed hands and a new lease was adopted there. We got them to agree to pursue clean marina certification for that. We probably won't be looking to trying to get on every single tiny little lease site, because some of them are just too small. It would be too onerous and just wouldn't fit. Next one that I would be looking at, but unfortunately won't be come up for quite a long time, would be Marina Square. They're kind of a 25 boat operation is kind of the threshold where you start getting any smaller than that, it just doesn't make sense. We will wrap it up in the larger permit for Morro Bay. But as we move forward, we try to get everybody we can certified. And it's been a good thing for water quality, and I think for best management practices and folks getting all their stuff in line and in order. Any questions, comments?
Thank you, Eric. I have a question for you. It definitely sounds like the right thing to do, but the businessman in me has to ask, does it provide for any economic benefits in terms of reductions in insurance premiums, things like that?
I would certainly ask my insurance company. A lot of marinas use it in their advertising because, as things start to trend, clean and green, and everybody wants to do the green right thing, a lot of marinas will start flying both the flag, and they'll put the symbol in their advertising that they're a clean marina, and they're starting to use it for advertising. Because using your insurance, yeah, maybe. I don't know the economic benefits. I think West Marine might possibly give some discounts based on clean marina certification. I have heard of some of those sorts of things out there.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Alan?
Yeah,
There are best management practices for underwater boat hull cleaning. The biggest thing with boat paints and boat hull cleaning is the copper in the paints. And most of the boat underwater hull paints are they're anti-fouling and they keep growth off for a reason because copper things don't really like to grow on. So that leaching into the water has caused some problems in some of the other harbors and marinas up and down the coast that don't have as good a flushing. Fortunately, we've got great water flow here, which tends to minimize our impacts from copper. But there's ways in which you can clean your boat hull, and there's paints that the industry is trying to transition off of the gallon of paint that weighs 400 pounds because it's full of copper, trying to transition away to another type of paint that will work as effectively and be cost effective and yet still keep the critters off, and that's always the challenge, along with keeping the boat clean for efficiency purposes and safety purposes and not getting things clogged up like water intakes. There's an invasive species issue, and you could potential of if boats aren't kept clean enough, you're spreading invasive species up and down the coast. So that's another factor that gets thrown in. But there are a series or a suite of best management practices for boat hull cleaning. There's a.
Is your microphone on?
I assume sandpaper would be down there is not approved practice.
Probably underwater, no. I've never heard of it. Well, I guess there's wet and dry sandpaper, but never really heard underwater sandpaper. No, it's
that,
brushes and soft pads and
that
sort of thing.
Material off, you know.
Yeah.
I saw a guy in the water up north either last summer or the summer before, and he was in the water, and he had a pressure washer sitting on the dock, and he was in the water squirting the bottom of his boat underwater with a pressure washer, and I thought that was an interesting concept because you're not abrading it,
right.
Just blowing the stuff off.
How are you not getting pushed away from your boat? I don't know how you stay in place with that.
Gives me a new idea for some propulsion ideas out there. Any other questions for Eric regarding Clean Marina Program? Thank you. Thanks for that report, Eric. We appreciate it. We don't need any action on that, just to receive it, so it is hereby received. That concludes Section B on our agenda. The public hearings, reports, and appearances. We'll now move on to unfinished business, Item C1, which is going to be a report from our Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee with any recommendations that they have, and they'll get us updated on what's been going on over the last month or so, which I think has been quite a bit. So I'll turn this over to Dana, our chairperson of the Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you. Things have been moving forward. We had a meeting 2 weeks ago. Alan Allward was there, Gene Dowdy, and Jeremiah O'Brien. We also had invited guest Eric Endersby and a consultant from Lisa Weiss Consultants, Henry Poncherell, and he helped explain some of the particulars of the grant that he wrote for the cable liaison group as far as getting some funding. This was all spearheaded by the Morro Bay Commercial Fishing Organization. As I've said before, they're just going at it. And it was good timing because they had just been awarded $30,000 for that grant, and it was also contingent on the city throwing in money also towards this feasibility study. After a lot of discussion, we decided to use that money towards one particular area of the overall phase one of the feasibility study that they had proposed, and that had to do with market analysis. So we talked quite a bit about data gathering and different stakeholders that they would be looking at. That was the majority of what we talked about. So that would be one of our recommendations to the Harbor Advisory Board, is to recommend this to the City Council, that they allow the Harbor Director to access some of the funds that they already have in their budget for the other important part of this, and that would be the potential site analysis. We think those are the two big key issues on to move forward at this time. So that's what we're looking for from the Harbor Advisory Board. I guess we'll wait until after all of our report here before we move into the any motions or what have you. Gene has a comment.
Yeah. Excuse me, Eric. Was there some direction from the City Council as towards the boatyard funding? Over.
No, not yet.
Bill.
It's my recollection that we have approximately $40,000 in a reserved account for the boatyard feasibility study that we've been working on for the last 20 years. Is that correct?
Yes, partially. There's a capital project account that was established in the probably mid-90s when all this started ramping up. I don't know what the exact number was that was originally put in there, but, you know, studies with RRM and a bunch of consultants, that those efforts petered out in the, you know, mid-2000s. That capital accounts carry over from budget years.
Specific to marketing, so going over and figuring out all the users of a boatyard and the size of vessels and all that type of data.
So market demand?
Correct.
Do you know if there would be if there is going to be an economic viability component in that?
That's it.
That is it?
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Thank you, Alan.
Yes, Bill.
So where is this $30,000 right now? Is it in the fisherman's bank account? And is it, or is Lisa Weiss, are they conducting the feasibility right now on that aspect of it with that money?
We'll bring Jeremiah up to the podium. Jeremiah, please introduce yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Harbor Advisory Board, good evening. My name is Jeremiah O'Brien with the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. The funding bill was... the funding was applied for, so I think I have to go back to the beginning. The Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization uses Lisa Wise Consulting on a fairly regular basis for many projects. We asked them, we put up $5,000, this is before any of the other monies, to get them interested in the project and begin work on it, if you will. They came up with approximately, I believe the number was $62,000 for the entire study, which does include all of the economic whether it's economically viable project, how much it would take, and as a matter of fact, it even includes work on funding sources and so forth and so on. So with that then, we had engaged them already. They applied for a grant through the Fishermen's Joint Cable Liaison Committee, which is a group of our fishing industry, our members, and the cable people via Verizon and the other cable groups that we contract with, that we've been working with here for many years. And they allowed 30,000 of that 62, with the caveat that the city would meet that number. And the reason for that was the fishermen didn't want to invest, if you will, in a project if there was no interest in the city to go forward with a project like this. And I want to say thank you to all of the city council, the mayor, city council, yourselves, for showing a great deal of interest so far in this project. But they wanted to see some skin in the game. Now, that being said, the money itself is currently with the cable liaison fund and will be released at any time. It can be released nearly immediately. It's been approved, so it depends now. It'll be released when somebody steps up and meets the same amount of funding from another source, hopefully the city.
Right. So to make sure we understand on this side, so that money that's coming from the joint cables, the $30,000 that you mentioned, is contingent upon the city matching that amount?
That's correct, Jeff. And the reason for it is, again, because they wanted to make sure the interest was shared.
Correct. Okay. Any other questions for Jeremiah while he's at the podium? Ron?
Lynn?
Thank you. On the city funds, will the city matching funds of $30,000 come from the $55,000 that is in the city coffers now, in the city budget now for the boatyard?
Yeah, that question is directed to Eric, I assume.
Yeah, that would be my understanding. I mean, that would make the most sense where it should come from.
And that's the way we understood it too, Lynn, that basically the fundings had been approved. It's kind of just getting the authorization to release the funds that actually have already been approved many, many years ago.
Okay.
We'll go to Ron and then Alan.
Is that, sir?
The site right now that we're looking at is...
north of the intake?
I'm talking about the shore-based yard site, and that is across the street from the Great American Fish Company. There has been an area given to the city here in the last 6 months that it would not all be necessary to be used, but we have spoke with the mayor, and the ad hoc committee has looked at the site. It's a very nice, feasible, utile site, and it's also located by the city yard, so it's convenient for the city. It's convenient. It seems to have fit all the purposes that we're looking for.
Okay, that certainly, I mean, hypothetically and potentially addresses the yard component. What about the hoist component?
We're still working on that.
Okay.
There's a couple of sites that we're currently looking at, and one of them hopefully will fit the bill.
Okay, and my second question, I have read a proposal. I don't know if it's the proposal that you folks are working with right now with Lisa Wise Consulting, and in that proposal there is language relative to market analysis demand assessment, and as I read it, it isn't clear to me what the geographic area that they would consider. There's no reference in there to geography. What is the thinking of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization about what the catchment area, what the demand area should for a haul out in a yard that should be considered?
Sorry, Ron. Again,
where would the customers come from?
Oh,
just Morro Bay, north of San
certainly
Francisco.
Certainly not. We'd hopefully draw from the Bay Area. We'd hopefully draw from Port St. Louis. We would draw from Morro Bay. We would draw from the coast, frankly. I've hauled out, being a Morro Bay resident, I've hauled my boat out as far north as Ilwaka, Washington. So I would imagine we would draw from the coast. We are losing. We've lost, in the last decade, we've lost the Bodega Bay Boatyard. It is no longer there. We've recently lost Gravel's. It's still there. But their lower yard, the boat yard, probably accommodated anywhere from, I'll just say 15, maybe 20 boats. They currently are accommodating four. It's a yard I've hauled out for off and on for 25 years. And that just happened recently in the last few months. So the demand for yards, and they were very, very busy, the demand for yards is increasing all the time. Matter of fact, as far as that goes, I had a conversation with Port San Luis Harbor, one of the directors on the Port San Luis Harbor, and he was willing to write a letter for us in favor of our boatyard, and they just did get $200,000 to extend the travel lift containment to haul boats there, but he would write a letter of support for our boatyard because theirs is not, he said it's not even a boatyard. It's a storage area, and he's been trying to haul his boat for 2 years and can't get it out, and he's a director. So apparently there's a severe need from Port St. Louis all the way now up to San Francisco.
Okay, thanks. And just finally, so do I understand correctly that insofar as the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization component of the economic, of a potential economic study, market analysis, that the definition of what you folks would like to see a consultant pursue has yet to be refined with a consultancy group? There's no pre-agreement with them as to what the scope of work would be?
The scope of their work in this initial document? Yes, no, there's a complete scope of work.
He had his hand up, and then we'll come back to Bill.
Okay, really quick, Ron. At our last board meeting, or ad hoc meeting, our focus was going to be on economic marketability of a boatyard and then a siting analysis. So that's basically what Lisa White's consultant were told to do.
Thank you. Bill?
I'd like to make a motion to have the city allocate $32,000 to the feasibility study for a boat haul-out facility here in Morro Bay.
I'll second that.
It's been moved to allocate the $30,000 toward the study, by Bill, seconded by Gene. We skipped beyond our public comment period to the motion, so with the indulgence of the board, with the permission of the board and consensus of the board, I'd like to move to public comment at this point. Is that okay with the board members? All right, so at this point, because this is an agendized item, I'd like to open it up to public comment to anyone that is in the audience that would like to comment on this particular item. Please come forward, state your name, and your comments, please. And if you're a fisherman, I'm going to limit you to 30 minutes.
This will only take 1 second. Good evening again, Harbor Advisory Board, ladies and gentlemen. Did Polly record the motion? Can you tell me what the motion was, Polly? My ears are in sad shape.
Now the Harbor Advisory Board recommends City Council to allow the $32,000 allocated funds toward the feasibility study of a boatyard haul-out in Morro Bay.
Okay, thank you, Polly. The reason I brought that up is because I thought I heard Jeff say 30,000.
I did say 30. I misheard and misspoke. So 32,000. Thank you.
I don't rely on my ears anymore.
So, thank you.
Can I?
Any other public comment?
Good evening, dear council. My name's Ed Sylvester, fisherman since 1960. I've been up and down the coast from several hundred miles into Mexico all the way to the, not quite, just to southeast Alaska, and been in one or two yards. And it is really pathetic that we have a yard in Avila. I went up there for a three-week haul out. This was 3 years ago. For just a simple three-week haul out. I was there for 3 months before I got back on the water. And it cut a little bit into my fishing, into my trying to make a living. And it was just due to the fact of swell. This liaison committee has, over the time, given money to Port San Luis on studies to extend the travel lift piers. So hauling in and hauling out would not be such a problem. And Port San Luis shined it. And they received a considerable amount of money because I was on the liaison office. This is one of the reasons why they have put up part of the money, asking the city to put up the other part of the money, because they don't really want to get burnt. And I don't know if this clarifies anything or not, but I was on that liaison committee for a while. But right now I used to haul out in Moss Landing. I moved all the way up there to haul out. I hauled out there and have a beautiful boatyard. But through bureaucracy and environmentalism, the boatyard has had their hands tied behind them. And due to the fact that the environmentalist part of it would not let them dredge the yard due to the fact it had.
Seeing no one else, public comment is hereby closed. So we do have a motion on the floor. Did I see something from you, Eric? No. Yes. I want to get back to this motion as soon as possible for discussion since it is on the floor. Eric, your comment,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. Thank you for humoring me. Through the miracles of modern technology, I received a little information on my miracle device here, and I need to make a little correction on my answer to Gene here earlier. Council didn't take formal direction. Or didn't take formal action in terms of directing us to spend some of this money on, you know, drilling down on this boatyard issue any further. They did give direction in an more of an informal manner that, yeah, that's an appropriate place for those funds to be used, but didn't vote on it. So I just wanted to clarify that. And I think I alluded to that, maybe not quite so succinctly in my staff report, that the council directed staff to work in conjunction with the ad hoc committee to bring back a review of the boatyard history. I think they wanted that as information to try and carry some decisions forward. So with that history, they did, you know, direct, but without formal action, you know, that that's a proper place for those funds to be used. So thank God for those people out there, whoever they are,
and one
Washington
further,
TV land.
One further point of clarification, Eric, that $50,000, is it 50? 55.
I think it's 55 and change.
That $55,000 was in the last budget, correct?
It's in the last budget. It's been in every budget, right, since it was left over from those previous efforts that kind of petered out in the mid-90s.
So I mean, the point that that I'm recognizing here is that it is in the budget. It was voted on by the council and an approved budget.
Correct.
Okay.
And where we kind of where we've looked for staff from a staff standpoint is, you know, it's been dormant for so long, even though it's in the budget. You know, we're looking for some council direction to, you know, kind of warm it back up. You know, turn the burner back on and get back at the
funding. So it's been there. You've used this word dormant, and so is it fair to say, I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but you're looking for some input from the public, us being the Harbor Advisory Board, and then some specific direction on the council just to be sure that that's the appropriate way to expend those funds.
Except given that it's been kind of dormant for a while, that's still a priority. And obviously it is. I mean, it's the council goal. I can't remember exactly which goal number it's under, but it is a council goal for the boatyard. So.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So we'll get back to discussion on this motion, which can include any questions for clarification directed to Eric. Alan?
This money that's in this account, if it's not spent on the feasibility study, will it then be eligible for other costs that come along in the development of the boatyard?
I would imagine so, yeah, depending on what the city's role in that is. It's in a capital account, which basically is an earmark. You know, we have our operating budget, which is, you know, we take in, you know, X number of dollars of revenue, and we balance our operating budget with X number of dollars of expenditures, and hopefully we zero out when we do patrol boat purchases or pier rebuilds. That comes out of our accumulation fund, basically our savings account, and the capital project account. That $55,000 is basically an earmark that's been authorized to pull out of the savings account when the time comes. So it's accounted for as being potential to be spent.
Further discussion? Dana?
Yeah, I just want to say something about the scope of work that we're looking at. This would be a group thing, or this could be two different studies. I'm not sure. The $62,000 that we're looking at was a proposal by Lisa Weiss Associates. So I just want to kind of clarify that, and that is actually much more work than the two items that we spoke about. There are other items involved that go beyond the site location and the market analysis, economic analysis, and such. Anything that we would see like that, I'm assuming that the ad hoc committee, along with the commercial fishermen's organization, would be working with the consultant as far as advising them what we're looking for. Just to kind of clarify some of that. Does that make sense? Okay.
All right. Bill.
The last question, you know, this has probably been studied to death, and as you stated here, Lisa Weiss is going to hopefully determine some funding sources. I mean, that has been the big holdup, plus the permitting processes of both the haul out and also the boatyard. So hopefully those things we can take everything that we've known in the past and put together a current situation, and I'm just trying to, that's what we're going to be doing. But okay.
So I have a question, because I need a little bit more clarification.
Are you discussed?
So then it doesn't seem to me to make sense in the fact that we would recommend to the city to commit funds when the first step would be looking at viability. And if it wasn't viable, why would we want to continue on to do a site analysis?
Because the city might want to subsidize it. Well, first of all, the first study won't be done because the money won't be there to do the study unless the city commits also. It's kind of the way it's put forth, from what I understand. Is this correct?
We'll bring Jeremiah back up to the podium. He's waving back there. He may have some additional input here for us. Thank you, Jeremiah.
There is not two studies. This is one study. And it says the estimate for the study was $62,000. So the fisherman and the cable said, well, okay, well, here's 30. Okay. So they are looking for someone to complete the funding for that one.
Okay, so that clarifies a lot for me. And within that one study, then, there would be two components, or, well, not necessarily only two, there'll be several components, two of which would include economic viability, market demand, as well as site analysis.
Yes, correct.
Okay, thank you. That helps me. Ron.
Mr. Chairman, I understand even before you said Mr. O'Brien clarified for you. I understand your concern about asking the city to commit $32,000 out of the surplus funds in the capital fund to a single study. So I would respectfully suggest the obvious answer is to do a phased approach. Recommend to them, if the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization is okay with that, to do a phased approach. We've already been told that there's multiple elements in the study proposal.
Let me direct that question back to the committee chair or Mr. O'Brien. Was that deliberated during the committee?
No, that was not deliberated. As far as us doing a phased approach, then that would require us to also do a phased approach with our funding. So our funding could not be released if you're not willing to release your funding. So another issue there too, Ron, would be this is really not up to us. This is up to this is an estimate by, we would have to have Lisa Wise here. This is an estimate submitted to us by them. I don't know as we would be conditioning their, we could condition the way they are paid on this, but I'm having a hard time figuring where you're going with that, to be frank with you. So.
All right. Further discussion. Alan.
Well, I think the idea was that maybe we could, both parties could get in for half the cost and then, you know, in an increment. I had a point of my own, though, that it seems there's a third party here that's not being talked about. I thought the Coast Guard was also interested in having its funds are contingent on the City of Morro Bay kicking in an additional 30. It seems reasonable to me that the Coast Guard could maybe show a little interest, possible. I mean, as a way of just generally conserving money here, they have an interest and a need for the thing. Might be able to approach them about that. I think if we wanted to do it in a phased way, it would be possible. Gene told me that Henry indicated that if they did the feasibility analysis and found that it wasn't feasible, that they wouldn't go ahead with the rest of it. I assume we could get our money returned maybe in that case or something like that, but I don't know.
And one thing to make note of tonight as well is the council members, I think, are going to be watching these deliberations. That's one of the nice things about having this Harbor Advisory Board that advises the council. So they're hearing this input and this discussion right now. So if we did pass this motion as it stands now, it is, of course, entirely in their purview and to take our recommendation, but then look at perhaps phasing it. And let's remember, of course, that we're just making a recommendation tonight to the council and allowing some vetting of this issue. So further discussion.
Well, one point was we looked at...
I don't want to see happen is the first part, there be a fatal flaw in the first part of the analysis. And again, speaking bluntly, if there's money that's already been allocated for a study, it's in the interest of the consultant to finish that study and spend that money. So, but with all that said, right now I'm very inclined to vote for this motion. Further discussion?
Yes.
Get your microphone.
It's on. Since Lisa Wise Consultants made the proposal to put the feasibility and site analysis into one study and recommended or said that they needed $62,000 in order to do that. Why did they not want to, or why were they not asked to separate those, or did they make any comment about separating the feasibility from the site analysis? If it's not feasible, would they then agree to stop the work? What was their attitude?
I'm going to go out on a limb, but I believe that their representative stated that if it was flawed, then they would not continue on with the study. They had a whole list, I think 5 or 7 items that they wanted to, bullets that they wanted to look at. And we said we want to see the market analysis first and then maybe siting. And then there's a whole string of other ones behind it. But we wanted to see the market now. And I believe that that's what they said, is, or Henry indicated to me, that said, yeah, you know, if that doesn't work, then we'll readjust or something or other. But I think the council, Jeff is right, the council can put some strings to it. So.
But they would be willing to go along with
that.
Well,
I can't speak for them, but I think so.
Right, but we're not locked in to spending $62,000 on a site analysis or doing all of the other bullet points that they want to cover if part number one.
I can't. You know,
you can't,
form, but I think that will be indicated.
Okay.
Thank you, Lynn. That's a lot of what I was attempting to say, so thank you for that question. Yes, Dana.
Yeah, a month ago when I was at a city council meeting, and this was brought up, and they were talking about, it was like a whole new item to them, and they wanted a lot of information. And at the last city council meeting, the interim city manager brought up, the questions you are asking are going to take a lot of work. A consultant is going to have to spend months putting this together. And this is what we're looking at. I mean, this is like, okay, we're making this effort. We're going to go do this. We're not going to just talk about it anymore. We're actually going to start making some moves towards, okay, how's this going to work? How are we going to make this work? You know, feasibility study is part of it. It's not, I would not say that is the end of it either, because that is not necessarily the case. There's no, Port St. Louis exists. How does it exist if it doesn't work? It's subsidized. And as a harbor town, part of this needs to be subsidized, if possible, if we can make it work. But the big thing with this study is we're looking at who is going to use the boat, what size boats are we going to be hauling out, what types of boats. All of this information is what we really need so that we can figure out what kind of project we want to put together at the same time. So it is, the $62,000 goes way beyond the two, you know, it is. There's like 6 items that it covers. It's a commitment from the city to go along with the commitment that the fishermen have gone out and hired a consultant to get a grant and brought money in. So this is what it's all about. And I think this motion should carry some weight when it goes to the city, so that they understand this.
So are you saying no strings attached?
Well, there's always strings attached, but I don't want to go there, but I mean, what our job is too is to present this to the city.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Thank you for those comments, Dana. Any other discussion with regard to the motion on the table? Alan?
One other point, in order to do it, feasibility analysis, you need to have a site, and so they were going to look at different sites and give, you know, feasibility. I mean, and it may get shot down because it's not feasible, but it also might get shot down because it's not kosher, if you know what I mean. So there are kind of shared risks, you know, and that's an argument for maybe keeping it together.
Yes. Yeah, and this has been. This is an important issue, obviously, and I think the city needs some depth. All right, seeing no more discussion, we'll restate the motion and then go to a vote. So, Polly, could you restate the motion for us, please? Thank you.
Flying there. Okay, so the motion is for the Harbor Advisory Board to recommend to City Council to allocate $32,000 of funds from the Harbor Department budget toward a feasibility study for a boatyard haulout in Morro Bay.
Correct.
And that was seconded by Jean.
Thank you. And that was moved by Bill and seconded by Jean. Does everyone understand the motion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Good job. Good discussion, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, and so that was the vote on that recommendation to the council. And you're right, we're not done with this item on the agenda.
Yes. To continue the ad hoc report, I want to thank Gene Dowdy for his many years at looking at this project over and over again, and his huge amount of knowledge of the bay that he brings with it. He has been helping us a lot through all of this, getting it going again this last year. And although he is going to be stepping down from the ad hoc committee, but he will definitely have his say on the Harbor Advisory Board. And our new member, who is going to bring his professionalism and his experience in the industry, is going to be joining the ad hoc committee. So there'll be three Harbor Advisory Board members. That'd be Alan and Ron and myself. And we have Jeremiah O'Brien as the fourth member right now. And I know we want to look at possibly getting a staff, a Harbor staff member on our board, and somebody from the city council also. So that's what we're moving towards.
Thank you. Thank you. So we did, I discussed this with Dana earlier, and this is something that we talked about in terms of the ability for this ad hoc committee to give the most relevant and useful information and advice to the council. So, and as chair, I can appoint the members to the committee. So I regretfully but gladly, with gratitude, accept Gene's resignation from the committee and hereby appoint Ron to the committee. And I also spoke with Dana about chairing the committee, and we decided that a change in chair would be in order as well. So Ron will be chairman of the ad hoc committee moving forward. And I would at this time as well like to expand the committee, as we discussed, to include a few additional seats. These individuals, of course, can accept or not accept, but we are extending our invitation and think it would be most useful. We think some additional representation from the council would be useful, so we extend a seat to the mayor or his agent. We think additional representation from the staff would be helpful, so we extend a seat on this committee to the harbor director or his agent. We think representation from the environmental aspect would be important as well, so we extend a seat on this committee to the National Estuary Program. So we talked about representation from all stakeholders. That then would have, that would leave this committee with representation from recreational boaters, the fishing industry, an environmental group being the National Estuary Program, from staff, as well as from the council. We think those additions would make this committee much more relevant and further this goal of putting the committee into high gear and coming up with a definitive recommendation as soon as possible. So I extend those seats and those invitations to those individuals. I'll be working with Eric on that as well to make that happen, and as well as working with the committee on that. So thank you, Dana, for your leadership up to this point, and of course you're staying on the committee. Thank you, Gene, and we'll move this committee forward in that fashion. Any other discussion or comments with regard to this item on the agenda? Yes, Eric.
Yeah, just in terms of the council action, they did want us to bring back that history. It is in that sustainability plan. Lisa Wise Consulting did a pretty good job there. I don't know that we need to drill down to
facility renovation. Eric.
Thank you. As you know, the public launch ramp for boaters, it was used to be a dirt lot down there at Tidelands Park, and we've, over the years, through master planning and series of grants that we've gotten from the Department of Boating and Waterways, our good friend, I always like to plug them. We receive, we got $80,000 towards purchase of that new patrol boat. They give us a lot of money for our equipment. They do a lot of our training, basically for free, a lot of the boating safety enforcement training. And they do grants for pump outs. All of our pump outs in the bay have been DBW granted. And that public launch ramp is largely DBW granted. In the early 90s, I think it got a major redo when Tidelands Park was built, overlay of the parking lot, redoing of the boarding floats for the launch ramp. For those of you, Gene, you remember, you've been around. I mean, you used to have those old piers going out and then the gangways going down. Everything's been modernized over there, largely by the good graces and funding of the Department of Boating and Waterways. Well, that facility's in good shape generally, and it serves its purpose. It's a little smaller than we'd like, but at times with parking, but it's getting close to needing some major renovation. The ramp itself has taken a beating just from being used, but from being abused by us hauling boats up and down it to do boat demolition, because we don't have a boatyard. If we had one where we could haul some of these boats, we might be able to demolish them in a boatyard. So we drag them up the launch ramp. I think the most impressive one of which was a 65 or 67-foot wooden trawler, 72-foot wooden trawler, the Susan Diane, got pulled up that ramp. And then we did the rest of C2, a big steel trawler with a large amount of horsepower and heavy equipment pulling something like that. While it works, it's not the preferred method to dispose of a boat. So that ramp has taken a beating from that, and just again from general use. It's not really ADA compliant in a lot of ways, from getting from the restroom to the ramp. We put in pay parking there a few years ago, and we got the kiosk put in, the little pay kiosk, and it's not ADA accessible, particularly. So it needs some upgrades. Fish cleaning station, it used to be, Gene, you probably remember, before my time, fishing around here and using that ramp, but the history I read said that the Morro Bay Firefighters Association funded a new fish cleaning station that used to be down at the other end, the south side of the ramp, somewhere over in the parking area, over in that little dirt area at the end, and it was a little trough or tray thing that just fed right into the bay. That got redone in the early 90s when that whole ramp was redone, and we've got the cleaning station that's there now. Feeds into the sewer system, the water and gurry go into the sewer system, but the carcasses go into dumpster. Works, but not terribly bird-friendly. People tend to get attacked by pelicans and other birds. As we've got dumpster diving birds that are a problem. Pelicans and gulls get down in there, and it's not good. Then they get their feathers oiled, then they become a problem for survival of the birds. And so we're looking at an overall project, and I approached Department of Boating and Waterways a couple of years ago about a grant funding project, and they kind of laid out the timeline and said, those grants are generally, 2 to 3 years out. You apply a year or two ahead, and then we work through the process. So last fall, Boating Waterways recontacted me and said, hey, you still interested? And we said, yeah. And so they sent a couple representatives down for a couple of days, walked around the lot, showed them everything, showed them the fish cleaning station, the restroom, what we were hoping for, what they were hoping for. And the way they do it now is in past projects, and most grant proposals we do to DBW, in this project in the past was the same way, where the city would do all the engineering and design and layout work and submit that to DBW, and then they would analyze it. And what they have found over the years is that they work under certain parameters and certain design guidelines. What they found over the years is the stuff they'd get from the local agencies, while good, didn't necessarily meet their design parameters and guidelines, and then it'd be this back and forth. And so they finally just said, tell us what you want. We'll design it. We'll do the engineering on it. We'll do the cost estimates on it. We'll give that to you, and then you could submit that as a grant. So that's what they're doing. That's what they do with every agency up and down the coast. So I've walked the docks and walked a lot with them a few months ago. And they went around. If you could switch to the other graphic on that. And then it should be in your staff report as well. So what we've done is, no major proposed changes to the general overall layout of the launch ramp. We're looking to apply for this grant. It's due by April 1st. It wouldn't be funded, if approved, it wouldn't be funded until the next fiscal year, the 14-15 fiscal year, so not too far out. But it includes the basic elements of new parking, asphalt overlay and restriping, which is pretty standard. We've done a few chip and seal committee variations on them, you know, stainless steel troughs and water, and the one we have is pretty open. Like I said, we've got bird problems with it. I'd like to build in a little wind protection out there. We need to get some sort of small stub walls out there to keep the birds from, you know, pecking at people's legs while they're cleaning, and then get the dumpster in some sort of an enclosure that's both fisherman-friendly. You know, as it is now, it's a little ways away from the fish cleaning station, so fishermen are, some walk over and put the fish in the dumpster. Some walk over and get attacked by birds and try to put their fish in the dumpster. Some do a heave-ho and try and chuck it all the way from the cleaning station to the dumpster and make it. Some don't, so it really needs to get redone. It doesn't have proper drainage. There's no drainage containment, you know, so all the gurry. Some years, you know, when we do have big albacore years and that dumpster gets full of albacore carcasses, it gets pretty nasty, and it gets a lot of, you know, fish gurry and blood. The dumpster company does change that dumpster out occasionally, and they do line it with some sort of a painted or rubberized coating on the inside that in theory keeps it from leaking, but they leak, and it's just, it's not a good situation. So we'd be looking at putting the dumpster in an overhead enclosed type area next to the fish cleaning station, that, you know, fishermen can be right there, turn around, not have to chuck their fish, you know, 10 or 20 yards to get them in the dumpster, protect it from the elements, protect it from the birds, but also keep it accessible to the trash company. They don't want to have to open a bunch of gates or do combinations or take a lot of motion to get the dumpster out. So we'd be looking at redesigning that overall facility there. And then a new thing that we've been wanting to add, that I've been looking at trying to add, you know, is kayaking has grown in popularity and leaps and bounds around here. You know, a lot of kayakers launch at the Coleman Beach, Mother's Beach, depending on what you want to call it. Fairmount still launched back in the State Park Marina, which got a upgrade here last year, year before last, when State Parks came in and redid that little hand launch. But a lot of them still go to the public launch ramp. You know, general days when there's plenty of parking and there's not a big fish run, not a problem. But on crowded weekends, and especially if it's salmon season, where guys are getting an early start, or albacore season, where guys are getting an early start, and the kayakers are right there in the middle with their vehicles and or their boats, and fishermen wanting to get going because it's early in the morning, they want to get out and beat the wind, we tend to have some user conflicts there. So I've been looking at trying to find a location to put a separate launch, kayak launch ramp. The original place I had thought would be good was just on the north side of the north boarding float at the existing ramp. DBW looked at that and didn't think there'd be enough room to properly put that in there, because, again, they have to go by their guidelines and their standards that say it has to be a certain size and width and have certain clearances. They proposed to put it out, if you look at your plan layout there, it's number 9, 10, 11, kind of on the left side margin, basically near the fish cleaning station on the rock revetment going down from the proximate area of the fish cleaning station down. I'm not terribly excited about that location. I'd like to get a little input on that and the other elements from the advisory board. The reason that I don't like it, because it's right on the corner. It's kind of a high wind, high current area. It may not be the best. It might be better to try and tuck it in below our fish boat docks to the south, back in that area, in that new little sort of quasi-park that got opened up behind the trees in there that folks use now as well. So just looking for general overall input on design elements, any input on locations of things, any hopes, dreams, desires that you'd like to see. Like I said, it'd be a substantial ADA upgrade, accessibility upgrade from the restroom on down, revamping of the restroom interior. You know, I think it's concrete floors and concrete walls. Really needs to be tiled and cleaned up a bit and just upgraded all around. So I'm just looking for advisory board input that I can carry forward to the Department of Boating Waterways as we move forward and design this thing.
Thank you, Eric. I'm sure we'll have some input for you. So my first question for you is, I love the covered dumpster, but there's also an additional dumpster out there kind of in the middle of the parking lot. On the diagram number 17 up toward the top there, where it says install concrete project credit sign. Behind that is the existing dumpster that's there, and it gets a lot of odd items in there, couches and things I've seen. I jogged that loop quite a bit. So was that considered at all?
It's there. It's been there forever. You know, we've got the one down on the south end, right at the top of the ramp, that really serves the fishermen primarily, and especially in those slips. But it serves not just our commercial fishermen in those slips, but, you know, the recreational boaters coming and going. They come back, and, you know, they got trash that goes in there, so it serves that. The other one is supposed to be for the same general reasons. Our recreation and parks folks that do our clean the facilities and clean the park there and do the mowing and all the shrubbery stuff, they use those dumpsters as well. I'm always sensitive to those dumpsters being out in the public as well, because we, as you know, I mean, it irks me, and not just from a personal standpoint of
lot and the ramp. That's a pretty hard angled break. Sometimes when you're backing up, you cannot see the trailer when it drops on down if you're trying to load your boat back on. Wonder if you can ease that break a little bit. Those are my
okay.
comments.
That makes sense. Yeah, you're right. We do. Doesn't happen often, but we have it marked. We have sounded it. We know where the concrete ends, and we've got a mark on the dock, and we've put it on a piling actually as well at the end of the ramp. Tends to happen. I mean, there's more and more three-axle trailers, and with really low tide, some guys end up over the edge of that bottom of that ramp, and it's a problem because you hook a tire off the other side, and it's hard to get back up. But sometimes folks with sailboats, you know, that unhook and put in a hitch extension out, they have keel boats to get their trailer way down, they're definitely a problem. They have to really pay attention to it. But definitely I'd look at getting that thing down there. I think most of those are prefabricated. They've got lifting eyes or lifting rings in them, and I think they're cast in place, or they're cast somewhere else, and they just lower them in place. So I don't see why we couldn't go out a little further.
Gene, do you have any thoughts with regard to where the platform is for the kayak launch? I love the idea of having a kayak launch. I've piloted one of our charter boats around that corner quite a few times.
There's a lot of current right there.
And that's what I was just going to say. And sometimes you need to need to juice the boat a little bit to get to counter the wind and the current. So the positioning there does concern me a little bit, does it you?
On paper, it seems like a nice spot, but in reality, right. I'd find somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. So that's I would. That's why I wanted to ask Gene about it, because I was thinking the same thing. When I've come around that corner on a larger vessel, depending on the current and the wind, it sometimes you really have to gas the boat a little bit to maintain maneuverability, and that would concern me with that launch ramp right there.
Yeah, that's kind of my same feeling. It's right on the corner.
Yeah.
And I said, I think south of the south slips, back behind the head float, maybe off that other little park might be an option.
All right, so we'll just continue to go down the line, folks. Alan?
I think dedicated kayak launch is a great idea, but I was just curious, that Tidelands Park, does that not serve that purpose, the long dock there?
Not so much. The it's a skinny gangway to get down, and that's hard to get a kayak down or a canoe down. A lot of boaters really like the kayakers, especially at the concrete ramp. You know, you put your kayak right there in the water. You know, just have the bow of it hanging on. You can walk right down ankle deep water and step right in. So those kayak floats that they make, and they make them, you know, all over the up and down the coast. They're, you know, the regular docks maybe have what 20, 24 inches of freeboard. Those kayak docks are, you know, 6 to 8 to maybe 10 inches, a real low freeboard, so that you're not stepping down into your kayak. You're basically stepping across. So that's the idea of, okay, of the size of them. So,
yeah, I looked at that and I immediately thought, gee, that's an exposed place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just wonder about the survivability of the dock, even. But
at Tidelands, you know, they did build those little stairs down there, kind of with the same idea that maybe that can be used for hand launch. But again, stairs. Kayaks.
It's too short. And too
yeah,
deep.
It is. Too, and there's
bad
no. I don't think there's any rail on those stairs, is there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there
one
rail
side.
On that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Lynn, do you have any comments or input?
Yes. Yes, I do. And it says that it does not talk about the pilings that are on the little gangway that goes out to the Marina 19. I know those cross trees between those pilings are not looking very good.
Have you been out there lately?
Not for a while.
We, Associated Pacific, went in there in...
2 years ago?
No, it wasn't 2 years ago. It was last year, probably last summer.
It had to be within 18 months.
Repaired those piles.
I beg your pardon,
sleeve those
sir.
Piles and put new cross braces. So
I'm terribly sorry.
time
thanks
flies
for noticing.
Time flies when you're on the water. We'll continue to go down the line, Bill.
I think this is a great project, but I do tend to agree with the kayak. I don't think it should be there, and you know, if we can't find a suitable place, then we probably shouldn't put one in, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to put it in the wrong place, because then it's just doing nothing.
Yeah. Dana?
Yeah, I have to agree also. Getting it down the way would be great. You're definitely out of the current a lot more down by that little park setting that has been created in the last few years. I think that's a great area to draw that away from the fish cleaning area and all that, too. The one thing I wanted to ask you about was number 22, the upgrading the existing restrooms. Have they figured out a way to make the showers?
So that would be one of the things I'd be looking at to upgrade would be the whole coin op box and make it a better system.
Thank you. Ron?
Totally agree with Gene. Extend the ramp. Like the idea of the little park at the south end for the kayak launch. And relative to the dumpster problem, the one that was brought up where household goods and things get put into it, what about video monitoring on a post? Doesn't have to go anywhere. Just store it on a chip and put a sign on it that says you're on camera. Doesn't cost very much money. Well,
probably. All right. Thank you, Ron. Any other suggestions? Very good. Anything else, Eric, with regard to that?
I think that covers most. You know, one thing I didn't mention that's on there, number 12, the corner, you know, that little wooden overlook next to the fish cleaning station, that would be redone as well. That's just the input I needed. I mean, I had the same general feelings on this stuff, but just wanted to get it by the board and make sure that, you know, everyone's, you know, we got seven different viewpoints out here.
Yeah, that's going to be some great improvements. All right, thank you, Eric. That concludes item D2 under new business. And we'll now move on to declaration of future agenda items. It's 9:15. We've had another long meeting for our Harbor Advisory Board here. Thanks for sticking with us, folks. Before we move on to declaration of future agenda items, yeah, that's actually, I haven't been down there. That's the first I've seen that. We'll make an announcement here.
Polly, did you want to show this? Or Eric can talk about it?
It's on the camera right there, Gene, if you want to read it out.
Well, I know, but they can't see that.
There, okay, we'll put it on the overhead here in a moment. You want to talk about it at all, Gene?
I don't know anything about it.
Oh, okay. And Polly or Eric, do you have a quick announcement with regard to that?
So we received in our, we received several reports today. So as you know, we have a shark sighting protocol that we go through, and it's kind of been adopted countywide, and every public agency that has a beach does a similar program where the people think is a dangerous marine animal, and generally it's sharks. There's not too many other dangerous marine animals around that are going to do great bodily harm, but white sharks are obviously number one on the list around here. Protocols in place where an interview is done and standard set of questions are asked, and then the agency representative ultimately has to make a judgment call. I'll be honest, I've received some pretty interesting calls, and other agencies have as well. I've some of them are just flat out misidentification, where people just don't know what they're looking at. Some of them are. I've had one where winding through the interview process, it became pretty clear to me that the guy was doing a hoax. He was a surfer, and probably in hindsight, the waves were good at that spot that day, and the word gets out around here, and everybody descends there the next day, and he was trying to scare people away. Because a couple of things he said totally contradicted himself, and then he suddenly got off the phone, I gotta go, and so I went, okay, check the non-credible box there. But ultimately, it's a judgment call. You know, it comes up to myself or one of my patrol officers or a CAL FIRE person, you know, in Los Osos or wherever the agency having jurisdiction. We tend to end up dealing with Cayucas' sightings a fair amount because they're a volunteer fire department. They don't necessarily always have the water expertise folks to try and analyze a report. So we got several reports today, but one of them came from one of our commercial fishermen who was out fishing. So a series of reports, one from a commercial fisherman seeing something at the pier in Cayucas, and a couple more from some marine mammal body parts that washed up that were pretty clearly indicative of a large shark biting, prompted us to post the warnings for 72 hours. And basically, our protocol says that if there's a shark sighting from Point Estero to Point Bouchon, we'll post our beaches for 72 hours, just warning people of what happened. You know, if something happens in Pismo, we don't post, even though, you know, sharks have fins and they can swim from A to B. Something that far away, just it seems like it's not, you know, a credible threat to the public here. So it's really Estero Bay-centric. And Pismo Beach and Avila do the same. You know, they're not going to post for something here. And Cambria's kind of up on their own. Independent Republic of Cambria does their own thing up there. So that's kind of how our protocol works. So several different sightings, couple in the water. People in the water seeing something, and then to warn people that something's been seen, and just the heightened case of awareness. Typically around here, it's fall for white sharks. They're migratory. They're starting to find out more and more about them. I think there's probably residents that hang out, but they end up over in Hawaii, and they end up down in Baja, and they end up in the Gulf of California, and move around quite a bit. But fall tends to be the time when they're around here. That's when we get a lot of sightings. So a little early, but again, I think they're around year-round. And elephant seals. I mean, elephant seals, you know, the marine mammal population, as you heard from Marine Mammal Center earlier, you know, we've got 300 some odd thousand sea lions around now. White sharks used to not be protected by law. I don't think there was ever a fishery per se for them. Maybe way back in the day when they're going after basking sharks for their livers, maybe white sharks were hunted too. But it used to be sharks caught in nets could be sold. That would get caught up in gill nets. Now gill netting is, you know, largely a thing of the past, and they're under full protection. People can't target them, and they've slowly rebounded. The marine mammal numbers have rebounded. There's more sharks out there, so wind it up. I'm done.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. a brief comment, please.
You're looking at the future there. That's all I've got to say. That's what we're going to see more and more of that as time goes on. Mm.
Okay, you may have to revisit that at the next announcement period, next meeting. Okay, we are on item E on the agenda, declaration of future agenda items. Are there any declaration of? Well, let me start with Eric, with what you have on your list in front of you there, and then I'll go to the board because sometimes we repeat what you already have on your list.
Boatyard ad hoc, ongoing. Planning. Oh, I guess you got that. Planning process for. You know, I'll go down the list. It's on our minutes from last time. Interagency presentation on Ponga boats and kind of a little more Ponga 101. That's still there. State Park Marina. Results City Council meeting. I told you about that in the update. Harbor Advisory Board bylaw. I got that. Coast Guard building ongoing. Not sure where we'll end up with it. Marine Mammal Center. Wow, we're knocking them all off. Planning for the power plant property. So the new futures group was interest from previous board members about kind of re-energizing that. And I think that will, as the power plant is definitely going away and the city's negotiating with the plan on how we're going to move this into the future, that probably will become undormant of its own. Clean Marina's got that. Harvard Department budget. I just received today from Susan Slayton, Administrative Services Director, my draft numbers, you know, for my spreadsheet. We've got to start plugging it in, so we'll be working on that. Review of a live aboard ordinance regarding marine surveyor certification and standardization of permit inspections. That's on there as a future agenda, date uncertain. And on my other list, That's all of them.
Thank you. So, and as a reminder to the board members, what Eric does with a little bit of input from me is we prioritize those items, and as time allows and as urgency requires, we put those on the agenda and agendize them. So, future agenda, declaration of future agenda items from board members on this side. None on my left, any on my right? Ron.
Three things. Discussion of a public fish buying dock location, input from the Harbor Department regarding possible locations, and input from the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization regarding the number and identity of fishermen interested in participating in a scheduled public buying program. Number two, a focused discussion concerning expanded fish cold storage capabilities in Morro Bay, with specific feedback from the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization regarding how many cubic feet of product their members might like to store, for how long and when during the course of a year. Number three, the City of Morro Bay, via the Harbor Department, maintains a schedule of five-year capital requirements for waterfront infrastructure, including docks, wharfs, and piers. So a proposed future agenda item would be discussion with the Harbor Department regarding what periodic condition survey activities are associated with the five-year capital requirement projections.
Nice job. So we'll look for some support for those items to put them on. I, for one, support all three. Is there any other support for those?
Yeah, I second it.
Okay. Yeah, so we've got at least four members that support all three of those items. So if those could be added to the list, please. Those are nice items, Ron. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I see he's got a cheat sheet there, so I think it might be easier if he just hands that to you. I saw you scribbling.
Yeah, that first one was a little quickly. Long.
Okay.
And two of those, the first two, without going to discussion, the fish buying dock and expanded fish cold stores, you know, as you recall, the sustainability plan, the Fishing Community Sustainability Plan, which is going to go to council hopefully in the first meeting in April. We're looking not only for the council to adopt that plan and accept it, but to give staff direction on, you know, from Harbor Advisory Board recommendation as well, which ones to drill down on. Cold storage is one of them. So,
good. Any other future agenda items?
I have one.
Yes, Alan.
This is in the future, possibly the distant future, something that keeps nagging at the back of my mind. So I'd like to see the slip holders, at least of the city, be receiving some kind of a phone call in regards to a tsunami warning. I know the last tsunami we had, I got a call half an hour before the tsunami hit. I lived in a Tescadero. I hit the dock, got in my boat, pulled away, and off I went, you know, up and down the bay, looking at people in their boats that were, you know, perpendicular to the current, tipping, you know, way over, water flooding in, you know, docks. If you leave your boat in the slip, it'll damage the dock. It'll actually bend it. In fact, my slip now has a permanent bend in it.
So would the agenda item be emergency?
Trying to figure out some way to get that news out. And I've talked to the
emergency notification systems.
Well, I know different government bodies get so that message.
So what we're doing at this point, Alan, is we will agree to put that on the agenda. We're not for a future agenda. I'm just wondering off the top of my head, and maybe I'll get a little input from Eric on this, that almost could be in a director's report. Could you address that in your report, or would you like to see us agendize that?
I can address it. I mean, there is, without, again, a discussion, it's basically called reverse 911. Most municipalities have the capability. The city has the capability, and I think.
So how about this, Eric? How about if you address that issue in next month's Harbor Director's report?
Status report.
Status report. And then I think if there's still need to inquire, then perhaps we could come back and agendize that. Does that sound fair, Alan?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I just want to put it out there.
Thank you.
It's something that keeps coming up.
I see something else at the end. Gene. All right. Any other future agenda items? Okay. Thank you for your patience tonight and your thoughtful deliberation, and thank you for your service, gentlemen and lady. So it is time for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
It's moved by Lynn, seconded by Dana. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thanks again for a good meeting. Good night.